the Trump administration announced Wednesday it was taking steps to ban flavored e-cigarettes from the market, amid nationwide alarm over an outbreak of a mysterious lung disease that has sickened hundreds and killed at least six people. Alex Azar, the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, told reporters Wednesday from the Oval Office that in the coming weeks, the FDA would issue guidance that would lead to a ban of all non-tobacco vape flavors.
It's called K218B, dubbed a heavy, larger super earth, and it may have one ingredient necessary to support life as we know it, water. The so-called exoplanet outside our solar system orbits a red dwarf star.
The planet is located in a system more than 100 light years away,
making travel there impossible. Rather than looking for Earth alternatives, the team says it's best to focus on improving living conditions here on Earth.
Peloton Interactive flexing its financial muscles. The exercise startup, known for its on-demand workouts on pricey bikes, valued itself at up to $8.2 billion in its latest filing Tuesday. Peloton expects to price its shares for its initial public offering at $26 to $29. It aims to raise up to $1.3 billion so it can run its operations, invest in marketing, and buy new technologies.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It is September the 12th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. On the program today, we're going to focus in on wealth and financial management. When you look for a financial planner, do you expect to get one for life? Maybe one that also attends your weddings? We'll talk with Mia Erickson today. She's our thought leader from Whitnell, part of Associated Bank. That'll be first up this morning. A little bit later in the program, Chicago Innovation Award nominees have been announced, along with the Chicago Innovation Trends Report. And Jacob Sherman will be here to explain a little bit of it to us, share some of the details. Jacob is the Community Development Manager at Chicago Innovation. We'll do that at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour. So stay with us right here on 720 WGN. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after the Dow Jones Industrials closed out yesterday back above 27,000 for the first time since early August. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was up 228 points. The Nasdaq finished up 86. The S&P gained nearly 22 points this morning. We look like we're going to have a positive open, but numbers are just barely above a quarter of a percent on the Dow, just above a third on the Nasdaq. So we'll be watching this closely as we move forward. There is some news on trade that we'll get to momentarily that could be impacting things as well. In Asia, markets are generally in the green, with Tokyo ending the day up 161 points. In Hong Kong, lower by a quarter of a percent. In China, up by nearly three quarters of a percent. And in Europe, markets are mixed. In London, lower. In Germany, higher. And in France, lower. Fractionally so in all of those indexes. And in the United States, oil is trading at $55.38 a barrel, which is down about 37 cents. Some news this morning, trade, U.S.-China trade, President Trump is delaying an increase in tariffs on Chinese goods by a couple of weeks. The president said yesterday on Twitter that Chinese leaders asked to push back the tariff hike because the day they were supposed to go into effect, October 1st, is the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. Increased tariffs on $250 billion of Chinese goods will now go into effect on October 15th. The Chinese have also exempted some products, some U.S. products, from tariffs in their country. President Trump calling that move a gesture of goodwill. American workers are not bringing home much more money than they did 20 years ago. Figures from the Census Bureau released this week show the median household income in the U.S. has increased only 2.7% since 1999. The median household income in the country is $63,200. That's less than $1,700 above the median household income in 1999, despite the longest economic expansion in the nation's history. the report gives some credence to all of the experts who say wealth inequality is splitting apart at a faster rate and wage growth has been stagnant in the United States. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Mia Erickson is with us this morning. Mia is a senior vice president at Whitnell, which is part of Associated Bank. We're going to talk a little bit about wealth management and financial planning. Mia, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Before we get into our conversation, I want to introduce you to folks and have people understand a little about what you do at Whitnell. Tell us, first of all, what your job is and also what kinds of things you do on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm going to give you a little background. So I grew up in a small town in Indiana, went to Purdue University where I pursued a financial planning degree. From there, I've been in the financial service industry for about 30 years. That's consisted of insurance, banking, brokerage, and wealth management. So I've got a pretty diverse background. When we're working with clients, we are held to a fiduciary standard because I have a CFP, Certified Financial Planning Designation. The fiduciary standard means that we have to make sure that our clients' interests are aligned. When we're working with clients, we have to make sure that their interests are put first. What I do at Whitnell, I run a wealth management team at Whitnell, and I also serve on the executive leadership team.
We throw around the term wealth management a lot. In your world, what does that mean to you? What kinds of things does that entail?
So it's comprehensive. When you look at a client's situation, we're not looking at just one particular area. So when we say wealth management, that's normally going to consist of working with the client, where they've been, where they're at now, and where they're going. And how we do that is we're looking at all aspects of their financial plan. So we're working with them on cash flow planning, budgeting. We're working with them on retirement planning, working with them on taxes, their estate planning, charitable issues, and more importantly, their asset allocation under investments. So when we're working with a client, first and foremost, we're trying to make sure that they've got a comprehensive plan. Most clients that we work with, they've worked with a number of different advisors over the years. They might have, I use the term hodgepodge of a financial situation, which means that nothing's really working together, but they've got a lot of pieces. Our job is to help come and put some planning around that so they've got a comprehensive wealth management approach going forward.
We know from talking to some of your colleagues at Whitnell that this is why Whitnell stands out, is that you're able to do all kinds of things. You have a bunch of different hats. You're the point person, the quarterback, as it were, mm-hmm. for the wealth management effort.
Mm-hmm. So when we work with a client as that quarterback, so a client's over the years, they will have obtained an attorney. They probably have a CPA. They probably have an insurance person. They probably even have some type of investment broker. The thing is, not one of them are communicating together. So first and foremost, when we come in, we want to make sure that the client now has a financial team and there's someone quarterbacking that with us. If they don't have a CPA, that's something that Whitnell can do. We can prepare the taxes. We obviously manage money and we prepare the financial plan. However, we're not the way we're paid. We're not compensated on any type of products. So when I'm working with their insurance agent, they can keep their insurance agent if they will. We're just going to help make sure that they're in the right products that makes sense for their situation.
One of the things that always interests me about wealth management and doing the job that you do is that you kind of build relationships with people that stretch a lifetime and sometimes into another generation. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the uniqueness of that.
So first, I'll say that we describe ourselves as the personal CFO. So most clients, when you think about it, I talked about that they may have a number of advisors. Our clients aren't to the situation that they can't manage their finances. They don't have the time, number one. Two, they don't have the desire. And if they do have free time, they normally want to be with their family or friends or hobbies. How we come into play when we're working with a client, we're making sure that, hey, I want my family taken care of. I want to make sure that not only this generation, but the next generation is taken care of. So when we're working with the clients, it's not uncommon that we do multi-generational. There's some families that I have that we have three generations that we work with. So the first generation, you know, remember, financial planning is a very young profession. The first financial planner, CFP designee, came in 1973. So if you think about that, it's a young emerging program. When I came out of school in the late 80s, financial planning firms, where if you were trying to find a job in that field, it was maybe one or two man shops. You fast forward today, you've got wealth management firms, which is very different than, you know, a wirehouse or an independent broker. So when we're working with clients, you know, when I first started working with them, you know, they'd be older. They'd be 40s or 50s. Now, when we're working with clients, clients will say, I really want you to work with the second generation, too. I want you to start right when my kids start from college. You know, they're working with someone like you. They're able to go and help them with their 401k decisions, help them with their budgeting. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be a lot farther ahead than even their parents were when they came to us in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah, and that not just a little bit, but miles ahead, because mm-hmm. most people don't start doing this in college, do they?
No. And so a lot of times, so when, as I said, I've been doing this a long time. When people would come to us, they'd come to us and say, I want to retire in 5 years. Well, I have to, unfortunately, in the beginning years of my career, I'd have to say, well, that's a great goal. However, I don't have a tree that I can go pick that money off of. So we're really going to have to probably modify those goals a little bit. So you're right. Now it's, I can start with them. They're going to, that generation, if we're working with them right out of college, they're going to be retiring way ahead of where their parents were.
The idea, too, that, and we've talked about finding the right person, the right wealth management firm or the wealth management person for you. Sometimes it's difficult, but sometimes it's easy because somebody who is your client, word of mouth, mm-hmm. they'll say, hey, you've got to find Mia at Whitnell, and that's how you get new clients.
Mm-hmm. So that word of mouth, referral base, that's really the essence of how Whitnell has grown. We were a family office that we took this model of a family office public in the late. So back in 2005, 2003, Bill Tone had come over, started the firm. And when he did that, it's full service wealth management. So where we started and where we came from, it's all been organic growth. Yeah. And that has been referral base.
And that's a good example of how good that is for you. Your clients are not just in the Chicago area. You have them all over.
Yeah. So about 50% of my clients are in Chicago. The rest of them are scattered all over the country. Could be California. It could be Wisconsin. We have clients in Dallas, Manhattan, Florida. So they're spread out. And that really has been a couple things, referral base. And then as you work with that first and second generation, they're spreading out all over the country.
You mentioned something earlier that I want to go back to that I think is we need to focus on a little bit more. The idea of you being a personal CFO, mm-hmm. Is that something that's just for, you know, an individual client, or is that for perhaps an organization or a corporation client? Because it seems like a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. So we work with, in regards to executive benefit planning. So a lot of corporations, the term financial wellness has been thrown around a lot. We're in a job market now that companies are having a tough time retaining top talent as well as recruiting top talent. So when they're looking at their executive benefit package, one of the things that they've added recently, some of your larger corporations, and you're starting to see some of your mid-sized companies do it now, is add this piece called executive benefit planning or financial wellness programs, where they're teaming up with an advisor such as myself, and we come in and we're that personal CFO. So we will start working with those executives because the company is doing it twofold, to retain and recruit talent, but they also get really upset because sometimes the executives just don't understand their benefits package that they have. Mm-hmm. They'll have a whole suite of options that they can choose from to help them get ahead in retirement and savings, but they don't know how they work together. And it's not because, again, it's not that they're not smart enough or sophisticated. They don't have the time. They're busy, they're time-starved, they need to come focus on their job. So we come in to be able to help them navigate, again, that personal CFO, just like I do with individuals, become that personal CFO and help them navigate through all their benefits and, again, sit down and find out what their goals and objectives are.
Because there could be a bunch of different kinds of people that would be seeking out that help. First of all, you have somebody who may just be money has been handed down through the years to them, or they come from a family of money. But they're also, let's say you're you've just arrived in the C-suite and you've never had that kind of salary before. Mm-hmm. You've never had those stock options. You've never had that kind of benefit package before. I wouldn't know what to do either.
So I'll give you an example. So one of my clients, it's a husband and wife. They just happened to work at the same corporation, started working with them about 20 years ago. So, you know, they're in their, you know, early 40s, starting to work, newly appointed executives. Same thing. They did not, you know, they had stock options. They had restricted stock. They had deferred comp. They had executive benefit plans. They had no idea how these would work together. And how do you fit them into your cash flow? We started working with them 20 years ago. They hence retired last year. But it was pretty exciting to work all those years with them to see them get on a plan that they were able to buy a second home, they were able to retire, put their kids through college, and retire at a very young age, have their estate planning in order. We were able to help them navigate that process. And had they not had that executive benefit planning, they may not have come to us. Mm-hmm. And we knew their executive benefit plans inside and out, which is really a key for the human resources and benefits group. Yeah.
You've hit on something that I think even people who may not be in the C-suite would enjoy having in a regular job as his personal CFO. Mm-hmm. I think people in just regular jobs would love to have this. Mm-hmm.
So we work with a lot of individuals, as I said, that personal CFO. We are first working with them. I like to call it, we have the plan, the process, and the partner. So the plan is meeting with them, having them gather all their documents, anything and everything to do with their financial situation. They sit down with us. We go through that. That's the easy part. The hard part is really getting to understand their emotions, where they've come from, where they're at, where they're going. Really sitting down and saying, okay, let's do the financial plan. That financial plan is just a point in time analysis. The big thing, what people I think really stumble, is they don't take that financial plan and they implement that. So when they're working with us as their personal CFO, we're coming back, we're setting the priorities. We have to manage those priorities with regards to investing, with cash flow, with taxes, with estate plan, and again, a coordinated approach. They've got that process in place with us then when we're doing the ongoing monitoring. But more importantly, we're partnering with them and their family so they can spend the time with their loved ones and know that they've got that peace of mind that everything's being taken care of.
I think I know the answer to this next question. As I'm talking with you, I kind of get the feeling that how you're going to come down on this. But I recently called the company that has my 401k, and they have it's now automated. So you ask a question or you type in a question, and my question was, so what is my mix of stocks and bonds? And then it gave me this bland answer. Are you worried at all about the robo-advisor, the robo-wealth management person, or the artificial intelligence? Is that going to take over your job?
No, I don't think so. The reason being because so much of what we do, you can, yes, on those robos, you can put in, hey, this is my age, this is what I want to retire, here's my investment allocation. The thing that the robo or computer cannot do, it can't guide them through life transitions. Mm-hmm. It can't help them basically navigate on when's the right time to buy a house. Should I switch this job and look at this benefits package versus the others? How do I analyze that? Is it time to, how do I send my kids to college? Am I getting to the point that I actually can retire and live in retirement for 30 years? That emotions that go around, and you know, some of that is fears, and they have to basically calm and have someone telling them peace of mind. And look, we've done all this planning that you can do with it. It's not going to be the same as a computer saying, yep, go do it. It's not mm-hmm. the same because you're not navigating all those emotions and helping them with those big decisions.
And the level of comfort, it's so anonymous, and who knows who's on the other end listening to the answers you're giving. I mean, when I'm having a one-on-one, as we're having right now, I feel that's the level of comfort I want.
So the tagline at Whitnell, if you ever look at any of our brochures or anything on our website, it says connection, comfort, and continuity. Mm. And we did that because we had interviewed a lot of our clients, and that was a resounding theme by working with us and advisors at Whitnell, was that theme of we've got that connection, we've got that comfort that they're taking care of us and they're navigating us the proper way, and more importantly, we've got the continuity for our family.
Mia, a good conversation with you. How can people get a hold of you and maybe become a new client of yours?
So you can call our office number at 630-575-2300 or go onto our website, whitnell.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn, Mia Erickson.
Mia, good meeting you. Come back and see us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mia Erickson is the Senior Vice President at Whitnell, which is part of Associated Bank, our Thought Leader Conversation today. The Thought Leader Conversation is every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. You can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com in the Opening Bell page. You can also follow Associated Bank or Associated Biz on Twitter. Also, head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to hear more and meet our thought leaders there as well.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It is Thursday here on The Opening Bell. We're back at it talking this morning a little bit about innovation. Earlier this week, the Chicago Innovation Award nominees were announced at a celebration here in Chicago. We're also getting our first look at the Chicago Innovation Trends Report. To talk a little bit about it with us this morning is Jacob Sherman, who's Community Development Manager at Chicago Innovation. Chicago Innovation, their mission statement says they exist to further the ecosystem of innovation in the Chicago region. And Jacob, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Big deal earlier this week in Chicago. Lots of people in attendance. The nominees are out this year for the Chicago Innovation Awards. Any companies, any innovators that we might be aware of?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had about 450 nominees for this year's awards. So there's a lot of different companies from all industries, ranging from, you know, industrial and energy, healthcare, technology, food and entertainment, civic, and even a lot of nonprofits. So they run the whole gambit of large companies, startups, for-profit, nonprofit, high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech, too. So we got a great group of companies this year. Just a couple days ago, we had our nominee celebration where we all brought them together in one big group to announce the top 100 finalists. And we released the Chicago Innovation Trends Report, because we get a lot of information about what companies in Chicago are looking for, whether it's new funding or, you know, what their needs are, and as well as the money that they're raising, revenue that they're bringing in, and jobs that they're creating.
I want to get into the report in a minute, but I want to talk more about some of the nominees. I know that eventually you'll whittle that 100 down to 10, right? 10 winners?
We have 10 main winners. We also have 10 up-and-comer winners, which are startups with less than $1 million in total revenue. We also have 3 special awards: the social innovator for companies making a big impact from a social perspective, a lot of nonprofits in that category. We have the collaboration award, which is for 2 organizations that are working together to make an impact. And then we have the neighborhood awards, which are 3 awards we give out to companies making significant impact on a localized level in Chicago's diverse neighborhoods. So a lot of different types of awards that are going to be coming out, and really focusing on the fact that innovation is for everyone, and we want to make a really inclusive look at innovation. So not just large companies, but also startups, nonprofits, and everywhere in between.
So at this event, you look around the room and you see, do you see a trend? Do you see all of these different faces and see trends develop out of those faces? Like, for instance, is it technology that's driving innovation in the Chicago area? What kinds of things are creating the special sauce that makes some of these companies successful?
You know, interestingly, Chicago has the most diverse economy in the country. No industry actually takes up more than 12% of the total economy, and that's reflected in the nominees. You know, we had companies ranging from every industry. Technology was the largest, but even within technology, we're seeing technology companies making solutions in marketing and media, in healthcare, in cybersecurity, and education. So it's really technology in a lot of different industries, and nominees coming from lots of different industries. We also see a big focus on B2B services, which kind of lends itself to the notion of collaboration being one of Chicago's strong suits. You know, when a company is working hard to create solutions for another company, it breeds collaboration, because we're thinking about how can we solve other people's problems. So that's one of the strengths that we're seeing in Chicago's innovators, and it's great to see that trend continue over time.
Yeah, the innovation report is very eye-opening as well. The innovation that's happening out there is generating a lot of revenue for the region, a lot of GDP. The percentage is quite high, and I was really interested, too, that you kind of, if you look at all 450 nominees, the revenue that they're generating kind of puts them as a country almost, if you look at it that way.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the nominees this year brought in $13.9 billion in revenue just from the new innovations that they're nominating. That's not even total company revenue. So if you take a look at just the innovation coming from these companies, it adds up to being the GDP of the 126 biggest economy in the world. So countries like, you know, Armenia, Mongolia, things like that. So it's great to see, you know, it's basically a small nation that innovation is powering in the Chicago region.
You talked about technology. I like the pie graph that's here as well, talking about who's
in the mix of technology by far the biggest, but I like some of these others on the list. Nonprofits are way up there. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, nonprofits actually, we call them our surge sector this year. They actually doubled from 5 to 10% of the companies that nominated this year. And it really just goes to show, you know, Chicago has one of the highest concentrations of nonprofits in the country. And some of the work that these groups are doing, whether it be supporting, you know, income inequality or whatever kind of issues we're seeing, they're doing some really great work, and it's fantastic to see. You know, some of them are leveraging technology. We're even seeing some in the fintech space, a lot of workforce development. But it's all focused on making Chicago a better place to live and taking a look at how innovation can do that for people.
Oftentimes we say money speaks, money talks, and the innovators are getting a lot of capital. There's a lot of money flowing either from investments or grants and donations. How important to the innovation space is that, and having that money available?
You know, that's hugely important. And the companies this year raised $2.4 billion for their innovations. And that's just, it's a massive amount of money. And it's great to see, you know, and but 33% are still raising money. And over half are looking for more investors. We're seeing a lot of money going towards, you know, seed stage and Series A companies. People still looking for those Series B and C funding rounds. And that can be a make or break it for a startup that's trying to, you know, get their company off the ground. They're just trying to keep the lights on. So having to really demonstrate value and get funding for some of those technology companies really, really means the world to them.
I also like the breakout of the zip codes where this innovation is happening. The neighborhoods in Chicago, the areas of Chicago, River North, Northwest Loop, North and Northeast Loop, Near West Side, Little Italy, but even some non-Chicago cities have nominations this year. Talk to us a little bit about the suburban part of this.
Yeah, you know, it's great. Our name is the Chicago Innovations, the Chicago Innovation Awards, but really we're focused on the Chicago region. That extends all the way to the suburbs, non-Chicago cities, and even some of the downstate places. You know, the top places we're getting nominees from are Evanston, Northbrook, and Skokie, but we even had a nominee coming from Mattoon, Illinois, focusing on how they can, you know, use innovation to build the local economy of Mattoon. So, you know, we're seeing things in the west suburbs, in Naperville, and north suburbs, in Highland Park, and, you know, it's great to see that it stretches all over. And then in the southwest sides, too, we're seeing, you know, Bolingbrook and Oaklawn, and it's great to see that it's not just about Chicago, and a lot of the programs that we run actually focus on connecting those large companies outside of the city with some of the startups in downtown and vice versa. So we work hard to try and make it more of a Chicago region focus and not just downtown.
The 2019 Chicago Innovation Trends Report is what we're talking about. One of the calls to action here at the end of it is the needs of some of the companies that they tell you that they need to keep this going. Talk to us a little bit about what some of these are. Money obviously is on the list. I'm interested in the media part of that. And then talent. We've heard a lot about the effort to get talent and how difficult that is these days.
Yeah, you know, the influx of talent is tough for a lot of companies, and getting the right people is always a challenge. And unfortunately, we see a lot of great students grown in the university up here and then go out to the West Coast to try and get a job in a startup when there's so many great companies here in Chicago. So we're finding that talent is a huge need for a lot of these companies who are trying to scale their startups. But yeah, media and awareness is a big thing, and that's really what we focus on at Chicago Innovation is celebrating, educating, and recognizing these companies. And so we do our part to try and put them on a pedestal. And this year, you know, our theme is innovation. Innovators are the real stars of Chicago. And it goes along with that, you know, helping them build awareness and get the word out about the amazing work that they're doing.
Looking to the future, do you have a sense of where this is going? I know we talked about nonprofits surging here, but what other sectors are surging, and what might we see in the coming years from our innovators?
You know, there's artificial intelligence was one area where we're seeing a lot of growth. We had three times the nominees this year as just a couple years ago. So that's a big space. A lot of these, you know, cryptocurrencies, IoT is big. You know, being a manufacturing town, IoT has been helping these factories and all the supply chain infrastructure that we have here just become so much more data focused and driven. And then also, you know, with the legalization of marijuana, we're going to see some cannabis companies growing soon. Certainly, we've had a couple nominees this year, and we're guessing it's probably going to uptick in the next couple of years.
Well, Jacob, we appreciate you coming on with us this morning. All the best to everybody, and we look forward to seeing all of the winners coming from Chicago Innovation Awards this year. Thank you for getting up and being on with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, the Chicago Innovation Awards coming up on October 28th at the Harris Theater. Hope to see you there.
All right, Jacob. Thank you very much. Jacob Sherman, Community Development Manager at Chicago Innovation. You can find more online and find more details, too, about how to attend that event at ChicagoInnovation.com. ChicagoInnovation.com.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on. Markets open in Europe now, mixed day. With London and Germany, London and France higher and Germany lower. Market day over in Asia with mixed results there as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Interesting trading days at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. Soybean futures moved lower ahead of the U.S. government crop report due out later today. It was pressured by forecasts for favorable Midwest crop weather and also disappointment that China did not include soybeans on the list of U.S. imports exempted from tariffs. Corn also weakened as late-planted U.S. crops were seen benefiting from a late-summer heat wave, although positioning ahead of the monthly supply-demand report due today limited the declines. Wheat eased in tandem with corn and soybeans, pulling back from one-month highs on the prior session. November soybeans down 5.5 cents a bushel, December corn down 1.5 cents, December wheat down 4.75 cents. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, September the 12th. On the calendar today, the inflation rate for August is the headline item. Economists are forecasting a 0.2% monthly increase and a 1.9% bump over August 2018. Also today, first-time claims for unemployment benefits are out. Analysts are expecting 208,000 U.S. workers filing for initial jobless claims last week, down from 217,000 a week earlier. The monthly check on the budget balance is also out. Budget experts expect to see the deficit growing by $80 billion. Also on the calendar, earnings today from supermarket operator Kroger and chip maker Broadcom issuing quarterly financial earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, September the 12th.